me from the encroaching war and to distract me from the malaise I'd been suffering since my closest friend had been killed, my parents decided to send me to America. No amount of protest, tantrums, bargaining, or begging would change their minds. They were shipping me off to live with family in Boston and to study at Radcliffe, where my uncle taught history. At 10 a.m. on Wednesday, February the 11th, 1915, my parents and I arrived at the dock in Cherbourg. French ocean liners had all been acquisitioned for the war, so I was booked on the USMS New York to travel across the sea. A frenetic scene greeted me. Most of the travellers were leaving France out of fear, and the atmosphere was thick with sadness and worry. Faces were drawn, eyes red with crying, as we prepared to board the big, hulking ship waiting to transport us away from the terrible war that claimed more and more lives every day. While my father arranged for a porter to carry my trunk, my mother handed me a last-minute gift, a book from the feel of it, then took me in her arms to kiss me goodbye. I breathed in her familiar scent, knowing it might be a long time until I smelled that particular mixture of L'Étoile's Rouge perfume and the Roger et Gallet poudre de riz she always used to dust her face and décolletage. As she held me and pressed her crimson-stained lips to my cheek, I reached up behind her and carefully unhooked one of the half-dozen ropes of cabochon ruby beads slung around her neck. I let the necklace slip inside my glove, the stones warm as they slid down and settled into my cupped palm. My mother often told me the story about how, in Paris in 1894, soon after she'd arrived and they'd met, my father helped her secretly pawn some of her grandmother's treasures to buy art supplies so she could attend École des Beaux-Arts. Knowing I too might need extra money, I decided to avail myself of some insurance. My mother owned so many strands of those blood-red beads, certainly my transgression would go unnoticed for a long time. Disentangling herself, my mother dabbed at her eyes with a black handkerchief trimmed in red lace. Like the rubies she always wore, her handkerchiefs were one of her trademarks. Her many eccentricities exacerbated the legends swirling around La Belle Lune, as the press called her.
Mon chou, I will miss you. Write often and don't get into trouble. It's one thing to break my rules, but listen to your Aunt Laura, all right?
When my father's turn came, he took me in his arms and exacted another kind of promise.
You will stay safe, yes.
He let go, but only for a moment, before pulling me back to plant another kiss on the top of my head and add a coda to his goodbye.
Stay safe, he repeated. And please, forgive yourself for what happened with Timur. You couldn't know what the future would bring. Enjoy your adventure, chérie.
I nodded, as tears tickled my eyes. Always sensitive to me, my father knew how much guilt weighed on me. My charming and handsome papa always found just the right words to say to me to make me feel special. I didn't care that I was about to deceive my mother, but I hated that I was going to disappoint my father. During the winters of 1913 and 1914, my parents' friend's son, Timur Orlov, lived with us in Cannes. He ran a small boutique inside the Carlton Hotel, where in high season, the hotel rented out space to a select few high-end retailers in order to cater to the celebrities, royalty, and nobility who flocked to the Riviera. Our families first met when Anna Orlov bought one of my mother's paintings, and Monsieur Orlov hired my father to design his jewelry store in Paris. A friendship developed that eventually led to my parents offering to house Timur. We quickly became the best of friends, sharing a passion for art and a love of design. Creating jewelry.